Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee, and I'm glad you could make it. Happy Monday morning. Well, it was a good weekend around the Brewer household. We had a big birthday party yesterday for some grandchildren. And a lot of the family was here. It was a very, very hot day, so it was a great day to just sit in the pool, which yours truly managed by making sure everything got done really early in the day, and it all came from one giant pot. So that always makes my day a little bit easier. So it was fun. And Mike, my son that I've been so concerned about, maintained and was able to relax in the pool and get a little bit of moderate exercise. So hopefully we will know something today about what the next part of his journey is going to be. I want to thank you all for all the prayers and the good thoughts that you've sent our way. I'm sure most of you have been hearing all the talk about the two different scenarios that have happened in the last 5 or 6 days. Actually, the one, I think, happened last week. And they're both pretty sad, and they make me wonder if we've given ourselves some kind of, carte blanche in the mistreatment of others. Now, the way I understand it, we have an organization in place in our government. And in that government, it says that we have judicial system, we have enforcers, we have lawyers, we have judges, we have all these different people who have taken on the various tasks to make our government work. And we also, in that mix, have got things like social workers and people that are trained in the genre of understanding what makes people tick. And of course, that's a needed thing, but by doing that, things get very convoluted, to be honest with you, very convoluted. And by that I mean, if you have an issue going on, an altercation with somebody who's in a position of power, like a policeman or a judge, anybody like that, that actually is not on on a level ground with you, because their position gives them authority. So what happened in the past few weeks? One was a woman who was actually walking down the street, and according to the officer, he feared for her safety. So I guess a chase was happening because he was trying to get around a car. She would go the other way. She was 51 years old. And when he finally caught her, she was walking towards him. And instead of, you know, what should have happened, a conversation to find out what was going on, there was a major altercation, and it was all caught on video. And in the video, you see a grown man straddling this woman, punching her in the head. I mean, there's no variables there. That's what you see. Apparently, she's okay. And according to the officers that were questioned later in a big media support thing, so that the policeman didn't look bad, he said, you know, we have to find out what happened, what the prelude to all of this was. What difference does it make what the prelude was? We have a 51-year-old woman battling against a rugged, physically fit police officer. So that's number one. Then number two is the deal that happened in California. And that was all over the news this week, all over the news. And I watched it, and I could see a bit of excitement on the part of the gentleman that was being harassed by the local enforcement team. They accused him of selling cigarettes. Now, I don't know what that meant exactly, and they don't explain it. And he says, no, he wasn't. And they said, yes, you have been cited for this before. And ends up, they take him down and put him in a chokehold to subdue him. He was a good-sized man. This man died. He died. I'm like, what's wrong with this picture? I mean, does that mean now when you are put in a position of power, you carry a license to bully? Is that what that means? Does it mean now that once you've taken on the, for me, it would be a major responsibility. So you take on this responsibility in an effort to keep our world in a better place. Instead, you're part of the problem. Now, let me say that I always know that there's always two sides to a story. We talk about this on the show all the time. There's always two sides to the story. And I don't know what side of a story could, first of all, give stronger, younger, more authoritative person the upper hand to sit on top of a 50-year-old woman and punch her in the head. I'm not sure what kind of authority is in a position to be able to make those kind of actions. And the other one is the same idea, although at least this time it might have been a little bit fairer fight, but not when it's several against one. I am shocked to see this again and again. And then when we see something that's in a third world country and we see all the anger and the hostility and the horrific treatment of others, we're very judgmental about that. I mean, I hear people say it all the time. I see people post things about what happened this past week over Russia. It was horrific. You're right. But things like that have been going on in our world forever. But if we can't stop these little one-on-ones, these little things that are supposed to be our attempt at keeping things better, how in the hell does anybody expect us to stop something big like that? Or even get a handle on it? How does anybody expect that to get better if we can't get better in the little small nucleus in a neighborhood? In a Denny's restaurant, we have altercations. I'm wondering, to be honest, if it's a good idea to have any kind of hierarchy of any kind, unless they have rules to abide by. Now, they say they do. They say they do. They say that there's protocol. They follow instructions. I once had a long conversation with somebody because I went to pick up two neighborhood teenagers who had been arrested. Neither one of them were mine, but they were friends of mine, my kids. When I got there, they were in an annex. This was in the 80s. They were in a police annex. They were both handcuffed behind their chair, and their feet were shackled to the sides of the chairs. Now, one of them was big enough so that he could have picked up the chair if he wanted to and walked out like that. So I thought that was kind of silly. But I went in. I showed my dismay without any altercations with the officers. And they said they were runners. That's why they did that. I said, I see. And I waited and got all the paperwork. And I took notice of the way that I got treated. Now, I knew the kids had done something wrong. I knew that they deserved some kind of punishment for poor behavior. But I also felt that way about the cop. I thought his behavior was rude, condescending. He felt like he was definitely in charge. He wanted nothing to do with me. First of all, I was nobody's mom. And even if I had been, I'd had other run-ins like that with my own kids, and I knew that that wouldn't have bought me any slack. But I was being polite. I was being professional. And I just said, I just came to see what I can do so that these kids can get home tonight, don't spend the night in jail. Both of them were 16 years old. So the outcome of that took a couple days, by the way. But what impressed me was that I never, ever got eye contact from the officer in charge. He didn't give me any kind of feedback on what he was going to do, didn't care that I was there, didn't respect me in any way, shape, or form. So this goes back to the 80s. Now, we've come a long way since the 80s. That's 30 years ago. I'm going to bring Shell in. She's had trouble getting on the air this morning. I don't know what's up. Hi, sweetie.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, yeah. I'm calling from my cell phone now, so I can only stay on for about 20 minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. What was wrong with your house phone? You got a problem with the house?
I don't know. I was getting in and hearing the outgoing message, you know, from the, the automated message, but then I never heard the show. So I don't know if it was a glitch.
You were calling my house phone, though. Do you know that?
No. I called your house phone because it kept going dead, so I thought there was an issue with the computer again.
Oh.
So
no,
I called the door to you because I don't know that you answer your cell phone just before you're on the show. So.
Yeah. Well, when I'm on the show, I'm on the house phone, so I can't. And if I click over, I lose the station.
Right. Well, that makes sense. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I called.
Yeah. Okay, so you're on now. So what we're talking about is the different scenarios that have happened in the last couple of weeks that seem to give our enforcers, our organizations that are supposed to assert their authority over the rules and regulations that we've set up through our establishment that says, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that. But two things in the last 2 weeks are, and it's not the first time that we've seen it, by the way, but it seems to be like we're giving a license to certain specific adult organizations to be bullies. There was the scenario where the woman is attacked. They had it on video where the cop is straddling her and he's punching her in the head. I mean, just punching her. And it was all caught on video because this man who they interviewed afterwards videoed it because he couldn't believe it. And he knew that if he tried to intervene, you know, he could tell by the whole situation that it wasn't going to end well. So this man is on some kind of leave, and the two different interviews that I saw with the media said, well, we have to get the rest of the story. I said, why do you need the rest of the story when you have on video that a grown man who is physically fit is straddling a 51-year-old woman and punching her in the head. I don't care. I don't care what she did to him.
Wow.
That's not subduing somebody. That's beating the hell out of somebody.
I thought they're supposed to use tasers and stuff, which just incapacitates the person. I mean,
well,
isn't that
I think the deal is
they were given stuff like that.
Yes, and I think the deal is that they're supposed to have some kind of procedure. And that's what I talked about in the very beginning of the show. It's all about setting up the different procedures so that everybody is treated the same, fairly, squarely, without any kind of abuse. Then you have the thing that happened in California at the beginning of the weekend, where a couple of, they looked like sting cops. They were like in plain clothes, not in uniforms. And it's on video that they're circling this man and accusing him of selling, I don't know, some kind of cigarette. And they tell him, you hear him say, this, you've been arrested for this before. And he said, I didn't sell anything. He's a very large black man. And are you hearing me?
Yeah.
Okay, because the phone started making a funny noise. So they take him because he's, like, getting pacey, put him in a chokehold, and they took his life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So now, of course, the family is all upset. Now, maybe he was doing something wrong. I'm not going to negate that because I don't have that information. And everything that I've read says, you know, that there may have been something he was doing, or he may have had a record or anything, but how can that dismiss the taking of a life with a chokehold?
Wow.
So then I will spend tomorrow talking about bullies, right?
Say that again?
So you and I tomorrow on the show will talk about kids and bullying. And that this is what's going on in the world, where we've set up our organizational behavior in a way to maintain peace and lawfulness and all of those things. And yet, we've got this going on time and time again. I mean, how many times have I done a show about the abuse of somebody? And,
I know.
And then we have the other side of the spectrum where they get away with murder, literally, you know?
Literally, right, right. Well, the problem is that a lot of law enforcement, you know, they see day after day, they see criminals, you know, literally sliding through the justice system and not paying a consequence for some terrible thing that they did. And then they get this one person that they can exert some control on, and sometimes they overreact because it's built up in them. They're angry. You know, it's a very aggressive job to begin with, especially for, you know, police officers that are out in the field and dealing with criminals that are very violent, and they literally have their life in their hands all the time. I'm not making an excuse.
Right.
But, that, you know, that's one of the things, and that's why they have to go through psychological, you know, counseling from time to time, because it is something that can build up in them, you know. And but in other cases, there are certain people who seek out that type of job because they're already aggressive to begin with. And you know, there's a fine line there as to whether or not this person is being pushed over the edge by what he's seeing, or this is his basic nature, and he sought out that type of a job because he needs to have an authority to be that aggressive to somebody. And basically, that personality is a ticking time bomb. And from time to time, you've seen cops like that. They're overly aggressive, and then one day they do something unconscionable, and it hits the media.
Mm-hmm. I know, and that's a good point and a valid point, and that's true. The personality usually goes along with the, you know, the choice of who you want to be when you grow up, a personality that is, I mean, sometimes a good enforcer, a trooper, whoever it has a mindset for fairness. And they're awesome enforcers.
They're just awesome because they
pay
attention, listen, they watch, they see what's going on before they make any kind of assessment. But then you have the ones that could very easily be on the other side of that equation and be the bad guy.
Exactly.
They made a choice to try not to be a bad guy, but they can't stifle that intuition to be, to really be not nice. So, but in the meantime, this is not the first time that we've talked about a death, and we've talked about the demise of someone's family member. Now, the woman that was beaten, that was in California as well, but I think that one of the things that bothers me the most, and I'm confusing this. She's in California, and the man was in Staten Island. And I wanted to read this. His name was Eric Garner, and they did quite a video about him because, of course, he has a family and people who love him, and of course. It's not okay. It's really, really not okay. And I understand we've talked about we've talked about the Lord of the Flies. We've talked about all the different things that we see happens, even the movies into the future, Mad Max, and I can't even remember the names of all of them, but you see where everybody just kind of marches to their own drummer and it becomes a land of the fittest. And the most evil is the winner. So we get that we need this. Now I question the integrity, and I must tell you, if you watch the video where the captain of the police force is talking about what happened to the woman, you'll be angry. You'll definitely be angry. You'll say to yourself, well, what difference did, well, we need to find out what was going on, and she's being checked for being mental. Oh, so that makes it okay that he sat on her and punched her in the head because she's mental. Oh, well, that explains the whole thing. I mean, it bugged me. I'm thinking to myself, well, what difference does that make? That should have meant that she deserved more kid gloves than punching gloves, shouldn't it?
Right. Well, the whole thing is that I thought that police officers were taught how to restrain someone without physically harming them. I mean, it's one thing if somebody comes at you and they have a knife in their hand and you have to subdue them. But if he was just trying to arrest her and she was resisting arrest, that's not a reason to assault someone like that, you know. And the fact that he was sitting on her, why wasn't he just restraining her arms then? I don't understand the point of beating her like that. So, I mean, yeah, there is two sides to the story. You know, this guy caught it on camera once the cop was being violent, you know, but how do we know that 5 minutes earlier she wasn't trying to stab the cop and his adrenaline was all, you know, I mean, we really do need to know the rest of the story, but if that was the case, I think that would have hit the media already. You know, if she was actually attacking him with some deadly weapon, I think we would have heard that by now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, it says the beating took place Tuesday along the Santa Monica Freeway and was caught on tape by a passing motorist, David Diaz. This is not just jabs, they are hooks, he said. Those are lights-out punches. Those are not taps. You see it, you heard it. It was thump, 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 and then you see her head bouncing bam, bam, bam on the concrete. When you hear her screaming, no, don't stop. Then you even at the end where she has her hands up like this, when it's clear there is no more resistance, he takes another four or five shots. The woman who was beaten is a great-grandmother. And there's a lawyer representing her, and her family went to visit her. She has multiple lumps on her head, lumps on her shoulder the size of a plum, bruises and lumps all over her upper body. The police report released Friday says the woman posed a danger to herself and other drivers because she was walking within traffic lanes at times. It also says that when an officer asked her to stop, she continued ignoring the officer's command, and ultimately she becomes physically combative. You know, that would have been a real fair fight, right? The tape only shows a small part of what transpired, California Highway Patrol Assistant Chief Chris O'Quinn told reporters. There are events that led up to this. Until all that's collected and put into perspective, we aren't going to be able to make a determination. The agency didn't identify the officer, but says he has been put on paid administrative leave. The California Highway Patrol, to justify the beating, are saying that they were trying to protect her from harm. With a beating like that, no one wants to be protected. She only needed protection from the officer.
Wow.
She's in the hospital under an involuntary psychiatric hold. Now, the problem with that is that an involuntary hold means that even her family doesn't think that needs to be, and that's just to make the paperwork look better, I'm sorry to say, in most cases. So, yeah.
This goes to what we talked about once before, that law enforcement really are not trained appropriately when it comes to dealing with somebody that has some sort of mental disorder. Because if you're aggressive with them, you can snap them. There has to be a way of approaching them that keeps them from being vulnerable. You know, if they don't feel vulnerable, it's like a wild animal. You back them into the corner, they're going to come out and they're going to attack you. It's the same thing with somebody that has some sort of a mental disorder. You know, you need to approach them in a way that doesn't make them feel fearful. You know, and a lot of times that's where the combativeness comes from. You know, unless they're just deranged or something, and I'm not getting that from what we're hearing about this woman. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the rest of the facts are. But the bottom line is once he had her subdued, he should have just handcuffed her. It's case closed. I mean, she can't be combative anymore if she's handcuffed. Why didn't he just handcuff her? What was the point of being? It was almost like he was ticked off because, you know, maybe he had to chase after her or something. And just kind of lost his temper. I mean, that's what it's sounding like without hearing the rest of the facts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I'm getting more junk again on my computer for some reason. I thought I was good, and today I'm having problems again. I'm going to have to call the kids that work on my computer.
Was it like a pop-up?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's coming with the video that I'm watching with this guy
to get a pop-up blocker. Maybe they didn't install that yet. I have a pop-up blocker on my computer, and it really makes it, you know, better because I can go into other videos and I don't automatically get all these things opening up. It's amazing. You open up one thing on the internet and 20 other things open up with it, you know, that you didn't even click on. So it's really important to have a pop-up blocker, and it kind of prevents that. And then you get a little window that says, do you want to allow this? And I never answer it, so it won't open them up. My computer actually asks my permission to open up pop-up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I thought he did that. I'll call over there today. They're very nice young men. But a New York resident died Thursday after police officers put the man, who was an asthmatic, in a chokehold before apparently slamming his head to the ground. The New York Daily News obtained exclusive video of the incidents, which shows Staten Island man Eric Garner, 43, begging officers to let him breathe as he lies on the ground helpless. Now his family is demanding accountability from the NYPD. Police said Garner, who was a married father of six, died of a heart attack during the arrest, according to the Associated Press. The New York Police Department said Garner had been selling untaxed cigarettes, that's what it was, and that he had been arrested before for the same offense. In the video, Garner denied the allegations and asked a plainclothes officer why he was stopped. Every time you see me, you want to mess with me, Garner told the cops in the video. I'm tired of it. It stops today. When Garner refused to put his hands behind his back and asked one officer not to touch him, two others moved in to make the arrest. The video shows at least one officer putting Garner in a chokehold and slamming him on the ground. Garner can be heard screaming, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe," before going quiet. Multiple witnesses to death expressed anger at the NYPD.
Wow.
They jumped him and choking him. He was foaming at the mouth. 22-year-old Ramsey Orta, who took the video, told the Daily News. And that's it. He was done. The cops were saying, no, no, he's okay, he's okay. He wasn't okay. Another witness said Garner was absolutely not selling cigarettes, Staten Island Live reported. Those who knew Garner described him as a gentle giant and a big teddy bear, according to the publication. His family members, including his wife, Esau Garner, said her husband suffered from chronic asthma, told the police, the Associated Press, that an investigation into his death was ongoing. The NYPD said Garner took a fighting stance and absolutely resisted arrest. In 1993, when Commissioner Ray Kelly banned the use of chokeholds by officers, the New York Times reported at a memorial. Let me read what he wrote. Members of the New York City Police Department will not use chokeholds. A chokehold shall include but is not limited to any pressure to the throat or windpipe, which may prevent or hinder breathing or reduce intake of air. So that means, in essence, he broke a bigger law than the guy selling the cigarettes, if he was selling the cigarettes. At a memorial for Garner Thursday night, family members, friends, and supporters asked for justice. Is this cop still going to be on the force, one woman asked, and is this cop still going to be able to do this to somebody else? Community residents are attempting to organize a march on Friday. On behalf of New Yorkers, I extend my deepest condolences to the family of Mr. Garner, who died yesterday afternoon while being placed in police custody. Words mean so much, don't they? Doesn't that sound a lot nicer than what really happened? We have a responsibility to keep every New Yorker safe, and that includes when individuals are in the custody of the NYPD. That is a responsibility that Police Commissioner Bratton and I take very seriously. We are harnessing all of the resources available to the city to ensure a full and thorough investigation of the circumstances of this tragic incident. The NYPD's Internal Affairs Bureau is working closely with the Office of Richmond County District Attorney, which is leading this investigation. So all of that is lovely, but does it really mean anything? And I struggle to see the similarity between what he just described and what actually happened.
I know. Well, as soon as it goes into the PR realm, they have to try to give it they have to put it in a better light. And, you know, again, it's just, It's come to covering their butts and trying to mitigate the harm to the department because of the action of this one cop. Because, I mean, think about how many thousands and thousands of cops there are and how many of them are cops because they want to make a difference, because they want to help people, and they are fair and they are compassionate. And then you get this one cop that is angry or overreacts to a situation, and it damages the reputation of all the good cops. It makes it even harder for them to do their job. So it's got to be really frustrating to be in that upper management level trying to somehow improve, you know, appearance to the general population so that the rest of the cops that are out on the street can still maintain some level of respect and order. People disrespect law enforcement, it actually puts the good cops at danger. Think about it. So that's got to be rough spot for these PR people to be in when they have to try to somehow lessen the severity of when you get a cop making a mistake like this.
Well, and I think that's a big point that you just made in regard to we always have good and bad in every arena. We both know that. We talk about that a lot. However, when you talk about our enforcers, our policemen, our state troopers, our MPs, our military police, all these kind of things are a major position of power. And when it's abused, everybody, you're absolutely right. It doesn't just hurt the people that are being hurt physically. The entire situation, because now nobody trusts anybody. Now nobody believes that they can go to and get the kind of help that they want. They're afraid to.
Right.
That's bad. That's really, really bad. And very sadly, that is truly what it's become. It's become a, you know, unless you know the policeman personally, he's a family member, you live in a small town and everybody knows the beat cop by his first name and puts a different spin on everything. But when you're talking Staten Island, New York City, Manhattan, all those places, how many of the people that you think, I mean, you live there for a while, Shell, do people know cops by their first names like we see in all the movies?
No. Not unless they've been in trouble a lot.
Well, that's a point, too, you know, if they're immersed in that world of being in trouble every now and then or being a part of the police force themselves. But I think that's sometimes, you know, where the difference lies as to whether or not...
I think if you have beat cops that are frequently around particular businesses, I think that you might have business owners that know their beat cops because they might come out and talk to them and you know, chit-chat back and forth. So I think that's possible. But I think the general people that work in big office buildings stuff, I don't think they know who all the cops are. I think it's the floor, you know, the ground-level business owners and merchants and stuff who might actually be out on the street and have...
Yeah, that's what I think, too. I'm not sure, but I think I just lost Shelley. Did I just lose you?
I don't know. I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now again. But your sentence went out.
Yeah. Well,
so,
that's why I said I would only be on for about 20 minutes, because after, for some reason, when his phone gets hot, all of a sudden it drops calls. So I'm probably going to have to sign off in about 5 minutes anyway.
Okay.
Because I can feel it getting hot.
Okay. Well, and I don't want it to catch on fire or anything. Do you want to go right now?
It's not going to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, you never know with phones. I mean, remember that story that we did about the guy who was talking on the phone while it was hooked up to his charger, and that's what happened to him. His whole bed caught on fire.
Yeah. Well, it's not plugged in, so I don't think
there's
enough juice for it to spontaneously combust.
Well, that's good. That's good. One of the big things, though, about this is where is the recourse, Shell? Where do you think, if you say you're living in a fairly large neighborhood, say you're living in Fort Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale has it's a real melting pot. There's tourists. There's homeless people, there's very, very wealthy people, there are dignitaries, there are movie stars. I mean, it's quite a melting pot. So you're living in Fort Lauderdale, and you see that this kind of thing is going on in your, like, say, there's a couple really nice neighborhoods in Fort Lauderdale. I won't name them, but there's some really nice neighborhoods. And say you know that there's some brutality that has a license to be brutal. In other words, people that are in a position to do whatever they want to do to maintain what they call safety for everybody except those involved. What's the recourse today? Do you know of anything, like a hotline you call if you think somebody's not doing their job right or if somebody's being abused? I mean, how do we gain control over this? Do you have any ideas about that?
Are you talking mainly about law enforcement brutality?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I would think that you would either go to the Internal Affairs Bureau in any police department, because that's their responsibility, and Internal Affairs doesn't always Internal Affairs are actually kind of like the outcasts, so they don't deal with the blue wall whole thing. When you go inside the precincts, is when you're going to get, you know, their comrades in arms trying to protect them and protect the reputation of the precinct and things like that. But when you go to IAB, Internal Affairs Bureau, now those are like the watchdogs over them. So they come in, and I guess that's where you would want to make those types of reports, because if you make it within the precinct, it may get it may never go any further, because they may either be trying to protect the reputation of the entire department, and you know, trying to kind of, you know, sweep it under the carpet, so to speak. So I think internal affairs would probably be the appropriate thing to report abuse and allow them to investigate it, because they come in and they don't tolerate the blue wall. They don't tolerate, one cop not talking because he doesn't want to get his buddy in trouble or something. You know, they're very, very hard on that. That's why a lot of people that are in that position aren't really well liked by police, because they go in with that level of, we're going to find out what's happening, and, even if we have to turn your life upside down. So,
mm-hmm. You see that entity on Law and Order all the time. All of the main players on all the different Law and Orders are under the scrutiny of the, what did you call it, the IAE or IEA?
The IAB, Internal Affairs Bureau, IAB.
Mm-hmm. IAB. And, but again, and I know it's just television, but a lot of that is convoluted beyond compare too. And I guess what I'm looking for is, and I'll probably never see it in my lifetime, but I'd like to see us be on a page. I don't know. Righteousness is good to an extent, and authority is it's impossible to function without some authority. But there has to be more thought put into actions. Once your hands are going to be on someone else's body, and that's almost in every scenario you can think of that leads to that, you have to start showing some thought process and some, here's me thinking to myself, okay, I'm scared. I'm a cop, and I'm a little bit scared. Here's this great big 350-pound man who could probably whip my butt if I don't keep the upper hand. So I got my elbow wrapped around his throat because I'm scared, because I think if I let go of him, he's going to kill me. Okay. So I'm putting myself in the seat of who appears in this scenario to be the aggressor. So he's a little bit scared, so he does this. Now, somewhere in there, you have to be paying attention to the fact that this person can't breathe. Somewhere in there, you have to be able to feel the body of this person go limp or struggle for breath, don't you? I mean, if
of
you
course.
Put yourself in that place, don't those kind of things, you know, so that's when we want, I don't know, a higher power of consciousness to step in. I get that they get afraid.
Well, the bottom line is, when you're doing something like that, it takes a certain amount of responsibility and discipline if you're going to be working in a job where you are either going to have your life on the line every day, or you're putting somebody else's life on the line because you're carrying a gun and you're allowed to use deadly force. So
mm-hmm.
One of the things that kind of surprises me a little bit is why more police officers aren't trained in the martial arts, because the martial arts is not only making you physically capable of defending yourself without necessarily needing to use, you know, deadly force, without needing to pull your weapon, but it also is a mindset. When I had taken Kung Fu and I had taken karate at one time, and one of the mindsets there was to always avoid violence that used somebody's energy against themselves to basically disempower them. You know, if somebody's attacking you and you grab their arm and pull them in the same direction they were going, you can very easily disable them without even really causing harm to the individual themselves, but now you've incapacitated them. And they show you all these moves. And it always surprises me that our law enforcement isn't really taught more in the martial arts arena, because it would enable them to protect themselves from harm when we're talking about hand-to-hand combat. Now, if somebody's pointing a gun in their face, it's a different story. I'm not talking about that. But if they're close enough, martial arts even shows you how to take a gun away from somebody really fast and in a safe way without harming them and without harming yourself. So there's a lot of benefit, and that's always been a curiosity to me that we don't employ that more because it's extremely effective.
I don't know either. I have no answer for that. If somebody out there is affiliated with the police department and would like to make some points for who are supposed to be the good guys, we'd always like to hear from you. And believe me, in my lifetime, having been in restaurants for so many years, I have a lot of friends who are still cops or have been cops, and a good majority of them I loved a lot. I thought that what they did every day was a little bit scary, and I've also seen friends of mine that were cops be hurt, and that's a scary thing as well.
And
but
so
on the same token,
I've seen both sides of the coin, so that's why I can see both sides of the issue.
Exactly.
And so one of these cop shows, these judge shows that I watch, there was a cop that had given a woman a ticket, and she said that he was abusive. And basically what she did is she reported him to IAB. That's where I got that whole thing from. They did a whole investigation on this cop. He was supposed to have been getting a raise. They canceled his raise. They put him under all this investigation and all that. And then when they produced the audio, because you had that audio tape going whenever a cop pulls a car over, and it showed the woman was lying. He was nothing but polite to this woman. She was going off her nut, cursing at this cop, screaming at him, pleading with him not to give her the ticket and all that, but she was doing like 20 miles over the speed limit. So he wasn't letting her off the hook. It wasn't a 5-mile-an-hour speed limit. It was an excessive speed, and she was driving recklessly. But he was very polite to her. He kept saying, "Excuse me, ma'am," and things like that. He was never belligerent. And this is all the things she was saying. The way she acted is what she said the cop was doing. But by the time that he got cleared, they had already put a hold on raises, and they couldn't go back. So it was going to take him 2 more years to be up to get this raise again. So he took her to court, and he actually got a $5,000 judgment against this woman. The judge was appalled. She says that is an abuse of the judicial system. She said because there are cops out there that need to be called on the carpet and should be investigated. But she said you were just pissed off that you got a ticket, so you tried to ruin this man's livelihood. You know, she said just because you were pissed off. And she said that's not what our judicial system is for. She said for people to just, try to make something bad for another person. And she said, you had no right to do this. She said, if somebody is really treated improperly by a cop, they should absolutely go, to the higher authorities. And she said, that's their right. But she said, that's the same thing like a woman crying rape that wasn't rape because she got mad at her boyfriend. It's the same thing. The judge made that comparison. And she said, it's just as wrong as something like that, because you're saying something bad happened to you and it didn't. And they really admonished the woman. So you do see it coming from both sides.
Well, and let's make that very, very clear. Like I just said a couple minutes ago, especially in Ithaca, I mean, not so much here in Florida, although I do know a few here in Florida as well, but certainly in Ithaca, I knew almost every cop that drove or walked the beat. And most of them were personal friends. And all I'm saying is that I see a real fear. And we talk about this in the bullying arena. We talk about the fact that a lot of unkindness comes from a fear that people have about what's going on and what the deal is with their life. And I think that's a big part of what the issue is. It's about the fear that is built in. And I agree with being fearful. I agree with taking care of yourself and looking out for yourself. All I'm saying is that if I take it out of that arena and something that I did for so many years of my life, being a waitress. And I got a couple that come in, and they're mad at each other, so they treat me like crap and are abusive to me and everything. Do, in my position, do I come out and slam their food down, or do I spit in their food in the kitchen like everybody thinks waitresses do? Of course not. Of course not. Because I know what my job is. I know what my job is. That's the way I feel about everybody's jobs. If you can't do your job, then you shouldn't be doing it. It's
exactly.
Okay. It doesn't make you a bad person. What makes you a bad person is trying to stick with it and being abusive to the people because you're getting away with it.
Exactly.
That's what I don't like. It's just like when you walk into I've been in so many courtrooms in the last 15 years. And you walk in and you look at the judge, and I have a great I kind of enjoy people watching, as Shelley knows, and probably a lot of you know already too. But it's like I kind of assess people when I watch them. And some of the judges I've seen take their job incredibly seriously, but they do it with an air of fairness, which I am so respectful of, and I watch what they do. Do they ever make mistakes? I'm sure. But they don't make them intentionally. They make mistakes, and the definition of a mistake is something you do without intent. So they, but they still have an air of fairness. Then you walk in some courtrooms, and the person sitting up there, man or woman, is just so enamored by themselves that they don't think they can make mistakes. They think they're above any kind of mistake or any kind of flaw in their decisions. That's wrong. And it's, you know, when you're in a job of responsibility and authority, you have to be respectful of that. Otherwise, you're worse than the people you're trying to do something with, aren't you?
Exactly. You know, and you made a very good point a few minutes ago when you were talking about, you know, that there's good and bad in every profession. And one of the things that makes someone bad at their job is when they're in a job that's inappropriate for them, that they either don't like, they got in for the wrong reasons, they got in because everybody in their family did it or because they thought they could make more money at it. And when somebody doesn't like what they're doing or they got a job for the wrong reason, like a cop getting the job as a cop, because they want to have a license to be aggressive or something like that. So people really have to have a certain level of integrity about why they're seeking out a particular profession or why they're doing a particular job, because it can absolutely affect the ethics behind how they conduct themselves on that job.
Well, and that's the whole point. And, of course, that's, you can see that across the board, can't you? I mean, you can see that in everything we do,
in every field.
Yeah, absolutely every field. And I think you will be a lot happier person if you make those decisions. You will be, I mean, if you're doing something, you know, I'll never forget when Michael Borghese said to me, if you do something you love, the money will come. And I just looked at him and I said, boy, are you on drugs or what? And he started laughing. He says, you don't believe that, Reenie? And I said, no, I don't believe that. I said, because I don't think it's that easy or that simple. And, of course, I was listening to the words, not to the sentiment. And the words still, to this day, don't make a whole lot of sense to me. But now that I'm older, and I've really reflected a lot on that, the sentiment means a lot to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you have to make the choices that make you the best that you can be. There's a cute video on Facebook right now. It's about a dad. It's a he's teaching his daughter how to be proud of herself. And he said, why do you always look down when you tell people your name or say who you are or try to talk to another adult besides, you know, your mother and I? And she said, I'm scared. And he says, you don't have to be scared. So he does this exercise with her that says, tell me your name, but tell me loud and proud, you know, and she goes through all that, and I'm thinking to myself, I have such mixed emotion about a video like that, because I have created monsters myself by feeding someone's ego to the point of no return. And there's a happy medium in there someplace. So when you're talking to a child or a friend or anybody that you see has a lot of doubt and is very insecure about a lot of different things, you need to empower them, but an empowerment that comes with mutual respect for others.
Exactly.
Because just because you're special,
right,
and you're a good person doesn't mean you're the name of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
That, yep, and that's where somehow or another we mess up. You know, I talked about a long time ago, I talked about Sesame Street. The most important person in the world is you, and all these songs that they started singing on Sesame Street. And I thought to myself, well, that's good, because you want a child, especially a child, to feel secure in themselves and important. But I must tell you, I think that generation grew up thinking somebody owed them something.
Yeah. Well, and again, because there has to be some reinforcement. There has to be someone saying, yes, you're important, but you also have to understand that other people are important too. And
exactly.
There has to be mutual respect. It can't be everybody bending over for you, all right? There has to be a level of mutual respect among people. I'm going to lose you now because my antenna is really dropping. But everybody,
right,
have a wonderful day, and we'll speak to you again in the morning.
Bye, honey. Thank you.
Bye, Reen.
So that's the deal, you know. I think that maybe we hit on a very important fact, and that fact is moderation in almost everything that we talk about. A moderation about, you know, how you handle yourself, whether you're a mom, a dad, a teacher, a boss, a cop, a waitress, a judge, the landscaper, I don't care who you are. You deserve respect, but in order to get respect, you have to give respect. And I think that that's one of the things that are lost. When you become an enforcer, you start looking at everybody like they're the bad guy. And it's not like the old days when somebody had on a white hat and somebody had on a black hat and you could tell the difference. The world isn't really like that anymore. And a lot of times somebody wearing a white hat is the worst person you're ever going to talk to or have any dealings with. So I think being smart and having a sense of fairness is imperative with whatever you're doing, whether you're trying to help your child get to a better place, whether you're trying to help your spouse, your best friend, your employee, maybe in some cases even your boss. I think it's all about having a sense of fairness and, you know, putting yourself in somebody else's shoes for a few minutes so you have a little bit more understanding. My heart goes out to the people who are abused and are put in a position where they don't have any rights anymore. I wish I could change that. I wish I had a magic wand and I could make things better all the way around. But I also understand the fact that if things get too easy, then we all get real lazy. So you have to get up every day. You have to do the things that are right, the things that are right for you, the things that are right for the people around you. And you have to do it with a sense of fairness, without judgmentality, and by embracing other people's beliefs and other people's opinions. Other people's opinions are just as important as yours, even though in the moment they may not seem that way. In truth, if you think about something somebody has ever said to you for the first time that took you totally by surprise, you want to say, what, are you crazy? There's no way. And then you sit and you contemplate what they've said to you. A lot of times, it can make a difference in the way you're doing everything. And they're right. They're right. They give you a good suggestion and a good piece of advice. So if you're going to take any advice today, take that. Take the fact that you should listen and not pass judgment before you really reflect on something that's said to you. And that means anything, any arena of your life. Everybody have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow. It's Bullies to Buddies Day. This conversation will probably come up in it because I think this is a source of bullying as well. Have a great day, everybody. God bless. Bye-bye.